Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another Science Studio program. Today we're being very adventurous. We are going to delve into, a little bit, the nature of mathematics. We're going to be talking about things with a mathematician. His name is Professor Jan Lang from the Ohio State University in Ohio. Jan Lang sounds like a Chinese man, but no, this is a fellow from Czechoslovakia. So it's an unusual name, the way I pronounce it anyway. And we're going to delve into Jan's background, how he became a mathematician, what is math, and at the end of the program, you'll say, my goodness, that was very interesting. So, Jan, welcome to Science Studio.
Okay, thank you very much.
Before we get into mathematics, what it is, what it isn't, what you do, because I know you're in a very esoteric part of mathematics, and it's all esoteric to begin with.
I don't think so.
That's precisely what I want to hear. But before we get to that discussion, background, how did you become a mathematician? You grew up in Czechoslovakia, that much I know.
Okay.
Then what?
Okay. When I was at the high school, it was just many, many years ago. It was in the early 80s, yes? And in those days, each teenager's dream for one thing, to get a personal computer. Those were days when the kids were just dreaming about getting something which was called Commodore 64 or ZX Spectrum, yes? I was fortunate enough to get, when I was about, 16 year, ZX Spectrum, yes? From today's point of view, it's just better calculator, yes? But for me, it was a gateway to paradise, yes? You can write your own code and computer follow that, yes? Which means I start to write the codes. I went to some competition with coding competition for the kids, and you found out that the most interesting thing which could be done on the computers is just solving some mathematical problem. In those days, it was simple problems. What should be angle of your gun to hit the target, yes?
With the wind at the south-southeast, five knots per hour.
Something like that, which means it was interesting because you can plot it on the screen and do it, and you feel like almost like a omnipotent God, because you make your own world on the computer screen, yes? And you start, in order to do this, you start to need to learn a little bit more about math, yes? And then at the same time, I get hooked and interested in astronomy, yes? I have a telescope, always in the nights I was going out with the telescope, yes? Joining the local astronomical club, yes? And when you talk about astronomy and have a computer, what you will do? You will try to write the code and make a simulation of solar system, yes? And this was going on at the high school, yes? And you start to read a little bit more about astronomy, physics. And when you are reading those books, you just want to understand what is under the hook, what is inside, yes? Not only reading the books that stars are behaving like this, there is what's called nuclear fusion going in the star, then changing, you will start to ask why it's working. And then you need to get some deeper textbooks about physics, yes? And you learn that everything deep is based on mathematical equations, yes?
And so you needed to get further into those.
Further into, and right. And then I was stuck. I was somehow...
See, there are some people that would get to that point and say, okay, that's fine. No further. Let's go back to observation of, like, you had this famous Czech fellow, Kohoutek?
Yes.
Comet Kohoutek.
Yes, it's Comet Hunter, yes. He has so many comets named after him and asteroids, yes. He's amazing. But my problem was I was living in Prague. It's the capital city, and light pollution, it's dreadful, yes? Which means with your telescope, you cannot compete with that guy, with Kohoutek, because he was living in the mountain in northern Bohemia, yes?
All right.
With beautiful skies.
Lovely.
I was just in Prague, yes? My sky view was quite limited, yes?
Well, I mean, that's interesting, because I grew up in London.
Okay.
And I'd look at the stars whenever it wasn't cloudy, which was not very often. And even then, I couldn't see very much. So when I first came to West Texas, when I immigrated to El Paso, I was just gobsmacked, is the expression in England.
No. Here, El Paso and the neighborhood areas are absolutely splendid for observing stars. Yes, it was the first place when I was able to see, when I went here to mountains in the night, to see a Milky Way with my naked eyes.
Oh, really?
Here in El Paso, yes. I was here many years ago, yeah. And I went to mountains with my colleague, and I just saw that beautiful sky. In the cities, you just see a few stars, and that's it, yes.
Oh, I mean, we take it for granted.
Oh, you take
we
it
go
from
to the mountains a lot, when my children were little, we'd spend, a week up there, and we'd look at this every night. Now,
But for me, if I will live here, I will be like a Kohoutek. I will be staying all night with the telescope, yes. But unfortunately, I was growing up in Prague, in big city, yes, which means I was just need to, instead of watching, just need to read and think about that, yes.
Right. But of course, in Prague, you had other diversions. Wonderful city, wonderful music, yes. Wonderful buildings, etc.
But in some sense, I was fortunate or unfortunate less because I like a beautiful music, classical music, but I'm not able to play or either sing, yes, which means I was put away from this possible tract, yes. And I was growing up in the early 80s, which means we were having a little bit limited opportunities for travel and explore the world, yes, because it was in days during Iron Curtain, yes, which means you have just the one way how to escape were books, yes.
So you studied and you went to the university Prague?
Yes, in Prague. Because
did you study math? Or?
No, there was a one funny thing. When I was applying for college, yes, the system in the universities over there is slightly different than here in the U.S. Here in the U.S., when you go to college or university, you can declare herself or like undecided, and you can go and explore the topics and then make a decision, yes. Over there, we were much more, Austrian or German model.
British model, too. I declared when I was 18 and went to university, I was a chemistress.
Yes.
I could never possibly change.
Yes, we have the same system, which means when I was finishing high school, I need to declare which college, which school, and which area to pick up, yes? Which means there was no freedom of choice, yes?
Well, there was a freedom of choice, but it was one choice. Two. Yes. Where to go if you were lucky enough to be accepted.
Yes.
And then what to study.
Yes.
Maybe you could choose a minor. One year of something else. Yes.
But when I was finishing high school, yes, I have three topics which I love to decide. One was astronomy, yes, go and study astronomy. Another was go and study physics. And the third next option was go and do a computer science. And the last option was math, yes. When I look at these options, I think, okay, astronomy is beautiful, nice, but to be honest, there are almost no jobs, yes. Which means I love it, but I drop it down, yes. And then when I look on the coding, yes, I love coding. I was quite good from my point of view that I found out the majority of the coding is quite boring stuff, yes. You just write the new program how to do accounting, yes. How to make interference look nice for users, yes. It's just a work, no creativity, yes. Which means I just like coding, but not this kind of coding. Which means I drop it down, and then there was a physics or math. And when I look on the textbooks from physics, I found everything is just based on the bar, but many times in the physics, they will just say, here's this complex equation describing this system. Let us simplify it. And I always ask, why you can do it? I do not understand. And this is why I just run to beauty and simplicity of math. Because in the math, you have a bunch of the rules, and you operate in framework of those rules, yes. In the physics, many times you will look at your problem. It's too complex, too difficult. You will simplify. You do not know why this simplification is good, but it's working, yes? And you live with that. At least this was my impression on that age, yes? And then I decided to go for math, yes?
Okay. And so all your degrees from, and then you immigrated after a postdoc?
No, it was a little bit complicated, oh. Yes.
Mathematicians always make it complicated.
Yes, okay. No, it's cool. When I finished my, what's called, my master, I went for PhD, and I was at the same time getting a position at the Academy of Science at the Mart Institute, yes, which means I was doing my PhD at the Charles University and same time being employed like a researcher at the Mathematics Institute of Academy of Science, yes. And after finishing my PhD, I get a scholarship from the German government to go for a few months to Germany. Yes, I went there, worked there, then I came back, and then I received a scholarship from Royal Society to go to Britain, yes. Okay, why not? Because I had some research, they liked me. I went there for 1 year. I stayed there for 1 year planning, okay, I will go here for 1 year, work with these people because they are in my field, and then go back to Prague, yes. But life kicked in, yes. I was there for 1 year. I met some American professor over there. He really persuaded me that I should apply at their university. I was reluctant because it was growing up in the Eastern Europe, yes. Eastern Europe is really good to put your self-esteem really, really low, yes. You have really low expectation about your abilities, yes.
To avoid as much visibility as you
yes,
can.
Yes, yes, yes. You want to just be in the corner, right. And you do not want to show off that you are good or whatever, yes. You yeah. just want to be in the corner. And then he persuaded me to apply for job at his university, yes. I reluctantly submit application to his university, but I met someone else from the States which mentioned that they have a postdoctoral position, yes. And I applied there. Which I just applied at 2 places, nowhere else, yes. And I, to my surprise, I got that postdoctoral position, yes.
Where?
At the University of Missouri in Columbia, Missouri. And I went there, and I was expecting again, I will go there, do research, and after 1 year, go back, yes.
Yes.
But after 1 year, they came to me, asked me if I want to stay there for 1 more year later. And then 1 more later, which means at the end, I stayed there for 2.5 years. But then I quit and moved back to Prague. And I moved back to Prague. And then my problem was that after so many years living abroad, yes, almost 4 years living abroad, I came back to Prague. And there was for me a culture shock, yes.
Yes.
Because you used to a different way how the things are arranged, done, and then you hit the world when, how to say, it was slightly different, yes. And I was there, and I was there for 6 months at the Charles University, like a young fellow, right. And I get offer for the job at the Ohio State, yes. And I just went to my chair at the Charles, mentioned this, and he just told me, good luck.
Yes. What about your parents? What about family members?
Okay, family members. My parents, they are living in Prague, yes. Yeah. And I'm one of the 4 kids, yes. Which means they have
So there's still 3 left. So they said, go.
It's not young. So simple. Once I left, my sister left, and she left for England.
Yes.
And after that, she was a civil engineer. Then she worked in Sydney, Australia.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So your parents get to take nice vacations.
Yes, yes.
They are world travelers.
Yeah.
We'll take a quick break. You're listening to Science Studio. This is Keith Pannell talking with Professor Jan Lang from The Ohio State University, mathematician. And we're going to come back and talk a little bit about math as opposed to just Jan. Although talking to Jan was very interesting. We'll be back. Welcome back to Science Studio, Keith Pannell, Professor Jan Lang from The Ohio State University. And, okay, so we've learned a little bit about your story. And I will say, it's so typical of so many people that have sat around this table about their peripatetic nature of academics, academic gypsies almost. Yeah. But tell us then, most people have, especially in America, but I think all over the world, have a phobia about mathematics. It's a problem for them. Tell me, what do you think mathematics is? Tell us simply.
What is mathematics simply? Mathematics is looking for patterns, yes? Look at one thing. When you will have a small boy and girl in elementary school, and they are in the first or second grade, and you ask them, what do you like most? Majority of them will tell you what? Math. Because they can see numbers, they can play with the numbers, and they can see beautiful patterns with the numbers, yes? Over the time, perhaps this interest is going to a little bit disappear. It's not the mistake or fall of math, yes? It's perhaps a mistake the way how the math is delivered them later on, yes? But from my point of view, math is just looking for patterns, yes? And we people, we are simply pattern-looking animals, yes? Even people are now looking at the list of lottery numbers and trying to see the pattern to succeed, yes? In our ancient times, when we were hunters and gatherers, yes, and we see some traces and some tracks, yes, we follow those traces, those tracks, because we try to see pattern. We were expecting that at the end, there is going to be something which we can eat, yes? And many times these patterns work well and we get our lunch or dinner, yes? When they were not working, okay, we didn't lose anything, yes? Which means that we are somehow having in our mind always pattern looking. And the math is nothing else than looking for patterns, yes? You can look for patterns in some system of equations, yes? In some space of functions, yes, but you are always doing what your ancestor did, looking for patterns.
You just mentioned something, and I got to follow it up very briefly. I don't buy lottery tickets, but are you telling me that there are people now that have been able to discover some pattern in winning numbers as opposed to just random?
No.
Good, because I would worry.
No, the people, because we are so, eager to find pattern everywhere. We are even looking for patterns when there is no pattern, yes? Because it's burned inside of us, yes? Try to see some rule which is guiding world, yes? Some patterns which we can follow and which we can use, yes? And, of course, sometimes there is no pattern, but we still want to see it.
And so math starts out with patterns.
Yes.
But it lands up and finishes in such complex, non-pattern, obvious mathematical equations and their utility. Physicists use math to describe something called string theory or something else called quantum entanglement. And, I mean, these are purely mathematical constructs, except they've been able to do from time to time an experiment which seems to verify. So you would say that math may be correct or incorrect, but if it can, in fact, model reality, then the math must be reasonable?
Okay, put it like this. Math is, in some sense, always correct, yes? Because what is the math? We have some bunch of the rules which we are following, which means math results. This is one beauty about math, yes? Look, for example, at the sociology, political science, history, yes? Quite often, their point of view are changing with the development of society and changes, yes? But in the math, if you prove some statement about some structure, about some function, some equation, that is staying there forever, yes?
Yes.
In some sense, math...
Within the framework of the math.
Yeah, within the framework of the math, yes. About interpretation, yes, that is something different, yes. But in some sense, from this point of view, math is quite simple science. It's not so complex like, let us say, biology, yes, when you have no full control, like some problems in the chemistry, yes, when you could be having a plenty of unknown variables, yes. Math is a nice, simple, plain field in which you have a full controls over the rules. Yes?
Does that imply that mathematicians are a particular subset of humans in the sense, I don't mean sub in a negative sense, but a smaller group where they get a little concerned about too much variability, too many variables to spoil the cooking.
Yes, because, okay, there are different branches of the math, yes,
right.
But in the branch which I'm working in analysis, yes, we would like to get always sharp, precise, exact results.
Okay.
And if you have too many variability, yes, sometimes it's quite hard or difficult to describe exact results. Yeah.
So, I mean, I've done a program once, a shorter program, talking about fuzzy math.
Okay.
Now, this would be anathema for you then. Right. Fuzzy math just shouldn't exist, but it was very useful.
Yeah. Big question, Mr. Sometimes you can use if you have some knowledge about some not full information, yes, to get some information at the end, yes. But Wesco, I'm just doing mathematical analysis, which is in some sense math, which started with people like Kepler, Newton, Leibniz, yes. And all this was initiated just looking at stars and trying to do a mind model of
right.
that.
I was looking you up on the internet and saw that you've given talks with a sort of a title, if I can remember, Notes on Sobolev Embeddings.
Okay.
Now, this is sounding like a gardening show, you know, embeddings. What is a Sobolev embedding? What does it all mean?
Okay. That talk, which I'm going to have here, is going to be covering a inner structure of function spaces, yes. Let us mention one simple thing. In 1809, Fourier, yes, wrote a paper in which he was trying to describe a heat distribution in a piece of metal object, yes. And he was able to find that he can only describe the heat distribution in this object only if he's able to describe a function, yes, a graph, by combination of harmonic functions, like sine and cosine, yes. And from this arrive one nature question. If I'm playing some sound, yes, if you are singing, yes, can I copy your sound just by hitting a proper keys on the large enough piano? Yes, can we approximate any sound by just those harmonic sounds which we have on the piano keyboard? Yes, this was the question which was essence of his work. Yes, and in order to answer this question, we need to look at the sounds, yes, like some functions, like a graph of some function, some oscillation. Yes, and would like to approximate that by nice function like a sine, cosine, yes. Everyone knew that from their high school math, yes.
Can remember there is such a thing. Anyway.
There's such
and
a thing.
Tangents also.
And Wesco, of course, we are not touching tangents. Yes. And Wesco, and the answer to this question, yes, we can do it, but we need to be living in the good family of function, yes, which means only in the good family of function this is possible to do it, yes. And that family of functions are called, for example, L2 or Lebesgue spaces. Those are just collection of functions, like a sounds, yes, which are well-behaving, yes.
But you also need a lot of different keys.
Yeah, of course.
It gets back to the variables that you don't particularly like.
Yes, this is what we have, that we have here, all possible functions, with all possible periods and amplitudes, yes. But let's go in this function space, we can go and decompose in the good function space. We can go and decompose each function in those harmonics, yes. And this is going to give you a growth of concept of spaces of functions, yes. Funny thing is that these spaces, you can look at the sounds like in elements in the space, and these spaces will be spaces with infinite dimension. And this looks like a quite abstract object, isn't it? Yes?
Yeah, apparently.
But you are using this on a daily basis. When you are playing music on your MP3 player, you are just using the stuff which Fourier did, yes?
I know.
MP3 coding
when
is
I
just...
When I do all sorts of spectroscopy, I'm doing exactly the same thing.
Yes, which means this is what's called... What is a beautiful, yes? You have a huge family of some abstract, if you want, sounds or functions, and you can decode them like elements in some infinitely dimensional space in which axes are those harmonic functions, yes?
So
which means
you need big computers to do this.
No.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm a theoretical mathematician, yes?
Yes.
What I need for my math is just good, sharp
pencil
and paper, yes.
Okay.
And chance to chat about my idea with the colleagues, yes. And that's it. Sometimes okay. I'm using computer just check my simulation, yes. Because, for example, right now, in the rest of which I did with my colleague here from El Paso, yes, we were studying a generalized sine and cosine functions, yes. Because you knew that for sine and cosine function, you have a Pythagorean identity. Sine square plus cosine square, it's one, yes. And we ask the question, what will happen if we replace that power 2 by some another number, 3 or 4? Yes, we can introduce something which we are calling generalized sine, generalized cosine functions.
So will they start teaching cosine squared plus sine squared equals n?
No, it will be something let's call this, let us say, for each different power, you can get a different class of functions.
Yes? Okay.
And right now, for example, we are playing to use what Fourier did, try to use this function to decompose any signal. And perhaps this could be used for some signal processing, yes?
I like this analogy that you've had of the piano with the different notes in order to be able to replicate a sound.
Yeah.
All right? And I remember very much a good, very good friend of mine. His name was Cyril Parkanji, and he was from Prague. Graduated from Charles University, chemist.
Okay.
And he came and worked over here in the U.S. in University of Texas at El Paso. And one of the projects he was involved in with some French people from Marseille was the bouquet of wine.
Okay.
And he wanted to find out how to artificially make a good bouquet. So he analyzed and got all the components, made them or bought them, put them together, and it stank.
Yeah. Well, because sometimes, because this is one thing. When you are hitting a problem which are involving biology, it's too difficult.
Yeah, and we've come to the end of 28 minutes, and it's been fascinating. There's never an end, then, is there?
No.
Or is there?
Look, it's like what Einstein mentioned, yes. You have a problem, you have a mountain in front of you. You will go and climb on that mountain thinking that you'll be on the top, yes. And once you are on the top of the mountain, you can see in front of you another higher one, yes.
Yep.
Which means more questions you answer, you will see that there is a more even interesting question waiting for you.
I mean, that's the first law of scientific research or any research. Anyway, Jan, we've come to the end of the program. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much,
and Sam Cassiano, thank you very much for snipping things out of the program, apparently. And we will be back next week with another Science Studio, and obviously thank the audience for listening. Adios.